WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with
Terry D. Kester
and Garland Nixon.
And I am back from vacation, and I find out that
while I was gone,
you two gentlemen.
I noticed the level of the show,
while I was gone.
We're intellectual.
We missed you.
You two gentlemen allowed this nation just to go. I mean, apparently. Where's that backbone that you were supposed to give the president?
It's Garland's fault.
We have a debt deal that, page 2 of today's Washington Post, Dana Milbank says, Democrats mourn debt deal like death. Harry Reid said, well, it was better than the caning and murder of a senator in 1856, followed by Civil War.
But just a little.
Yeah, that's good reporting, because the Democrats have died.
And
they're all dead. I'm sorry.
Eldridge Cleaver called it a sugar-coated Satan sandwich, which Nancy Pelosi said with a side of Satan fries.
But Terry had a side of sagacity.
All I know is I go away for just a few weeks.
That's it.
And
that's
you two gentlemen...
Yeah.
Country falls apart.
It completely does. Now, if I had been president of the United States, and if y'all want to nominate me, I will serve. If I had been president of the United States, I would have pulled out my trusty Constitution and said, Republicans, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution.
Do you think Obama has a copy of the Constitution?
He's supposed to be a constitutional lawyer.
Oh.
He's supposed to be a constitutional professor. He's supposed to teach constitutional law at University of Chicago. That's in his
man, I'm not taking his
past.
Class. I'll tell you.
The 14th Amendment of the Constitution is most famously known for having equal protection of the laws, freeing the slaves, allowing all people born to be citizens. And that is the majority of what it does. But it has more than one section. And Section 4 of that amendment was designed mostly to say that if you lent money to the Confederacy, your money's no good, but that the Union money would continue to be good. It was very important for the Union to say, hey, Confederate dollars are worthless, but, you know, good old Uncle Sam's money's still good. And it says very clearly that the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned.
Now, Mark, let me throw something in there. Can I ask you a question about this?
Okay. Yeah.
That
this is
being
so sad.
Said... Now, in the event that the country defaulted and the Treasury said, we're going to pay the interest on the debt, but we're not paying Social Security and the other stuff. Now, wouldn't that have satisfied it in that the debt, the validity of the debt wouldn't have been questioned? Now, everything else would have.
If President Obama wants to make me Attorney General or allow me to work simply in his stable of lawyers.
You've come down from president?
I would take just working for
He's
the
office. He's falling fast, isn't he, Terry?
I would take just working for the Justice Department and the Office of Legal Counsel.
Next is, if President Obama would allow me to work as a janitor in the White House,
I'd probably take that. Yeah. Listen,
never mind.
At least you could get his ear, you know?
Maybe. I would have said very clearly, Congress did three things, okay? Congress, 2-3 years ago, set this debt ceiling, okay? Now, the debt ceiling, as I know you both know, Garland and Terry and our listeners probably know, George Bush raised it every year. He raised it in 02, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, twice in 08.
That was for war and
that was for
like
war
that,
and for subsidies to oil companies.
And tax cuts for the rich.
And pharmaceutical companies.
Well, you got to give tax cuts to
pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, they need it. They need it.
So when he did there were no conditions attached, and everyone went along and so forth. Okay, so when this was done in 08, since that time, two things happened. One, Congress said we're going to tax only so much. And two, Congress said we're going to spend much more. So Congress gave the president three contradictory instructions. First, they said, don't borrow money. Then they said, spend this much. And then they said, we're only going to raise this much, which is as much as you spend.
And we had a recession, and the revenues disappeared.
Right. Yeah, and you're not saying Congress is confused.
No. What I'm saying is that when any law body passes contradictory laws, what happens? It's very standard something.
You learn get thrown out of class, frankly.
No. The last in time wins. That's how it works. If Congress says that everyone 18 and older can drink, and they pass a new law that says everyone only 21 and older can drink, the old law, the last in time wins. Right. So first they pass the debt ceiling, then they pass the laws about revenue, then they pass the laws about spending. Mm-hmm. So all Obama had to say is, number one, last in time wins. I can spend more than I created. Number two, the Constitution says I can't go into debt. And if you don't like it, sue me. Now, there was a case back in 1935 where...
I was there.
Congress... yeah, you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
You were just entering middle age then,
right? Yeah, right.
Okay. In any case, there was a case back then where a guy... We went off some gold standard. The guy said, hey, I'm losing money because the United States is running this debt, and the... U.S. said, hey, validity of the public debt shouldn't be questioned. Supreme Court said he was absolutely right. Now, I realize we've got five renegade justices, and I realize they may not follow the Constitution. But then all Obama has to say is, all right, Supreme Court, you're not going to let me uphold the Constitution? Where would you cut the budget?
Well, not only that.
That you really think this Supreme Court is going to say, oh, we'll cut all the social spending?
You know the other thing?
Here's the other thing.
If Obama had said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and raise the debt ceiling on my own, and then let's say some Tea Party members, whoever, challenged it and went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is in the unique position of saying, as of today, we rule that he can't raise it. Tomorrow, the economy crashes.
Right.
And the Republicans who filed that lawsuit,
they're like, blamed.
Standing there to say, hooray, we won.
Exactly.
The debt ceiling's not. Then the next day, the economy crashes. I mean, it was going to crash anyway.
No other country has a debt ceiling. There's no reason for it. Nope. After all, if...
It gives the rating companies something to do.
Well, we're going to talk about the rating companies. We're going to get to that during this hour.
Gives them more power.
Because I really want to talk about the rating companies, just like I want to talk about the FAA, too. But the heart of what I'm saying is that the constitutional option is not only not a crazy idea, it's actually a pretty good idea. And all Obama had to say is, look, I hope we come to some agreement, but if we don't, I'm going to declare it unconstitutional, and we're moving on from here. And if you don't like it, take me to court. And by the time it went through the court system, it would be past the reelection time anyway.
You know, there's one.
Why didn't he take that option? Is it because he didn't have me as Attorney General? Why did he take that option, Terry?
There's one song here I really like between I'm hearing between the two of you guys, and it's strictly that song, If Obama, If Obama, If Obama. And you know, I mean, this is really the sad thing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, to begin with, to me, this is a manufactured crisis. I mean, as you say, there's all kinds of.
No, there's a real crisis. It's called the economy.
But yeah, but I mean,
the debt is not a crisis.
The debt is not it, right?
Right.
This is a manufactured crisis, you know, because there are options that could have been done, and I think it's done for all the reasons that we know that Rush Limbaugh wants, because it's good that Rush Limbaugh gets to win occasionally, you know. But I think, you know.
I think when he does his Oxycontin, he thinks he's winning.
Yeah, right.
We'd all be a lot better off if he just stick to that.
The only thing I'm not happy about this, but I'm relieved that at least you and Garland have finally come to understand that Obama is not the leader we thought he was. You know, and I mean, this is...
Well,
this
he really isn't, and I want to get to that also with our listeners later on in the half hour, because I got to tell you, it was a close decision for me between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I got to tell you, I agonized over it for a very long time. And I remember thinking, well, you know, the Clinton stuff would have had their chance, and here's this guy. And the left, I would argue that your average moderate Democrat was more likely to support Clinton. There were progressives on both sides.
Right.
And the more progressives were more likely to support Obama because Bill Clinton compromised, the left said, too much.
No.
And so they thought that Obama would not compromise as much as Hillary Clinton. I'm wondering, Garland, and if you agree with me, maybe in hindsight, maybe Hillary Clinton would have stood firmer
Amen.
Against Republicans than President
Amen.
Obama.
Well, it would have been hard to stand less firm.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah,
let me say this.
When he fell over.
Yeah,
come on.
But, yeah, but let me say this. I voted for Obama quite simply. I voted for Obama because I felt he was I felt, number one, he's to the left of Hillary. That's what I thought at the time.
I don't know that that's true.
No, I didn't say it was. I said that's what I thought
the
time.
Right.
I voted because I thought he was to the left of Hillary. And I felt that whoever the Democrats elect now after Bush is going to win. I didn't care who they elected. I felt they could win, you know, short of, you know, Mickey Mouse. And that was in question. I felt they could win. And I felt, okay, if I can get a left-wing progressive candidate, this is the opportunity, I'm going with him. And
Here's the thing.
He wasn't to the left of Hillary.
I think Obama
actually
shares many progressive ideals. Maybe I'm just deluded, but I don't think it's where his heart is.
No.
I just don't think he has the name male lower body part that I don't know if I should say on the air.
Cojones?
That's what I was going to say.
Spanish,
but I wasn't sure I could say that.
You can say cojones.
Well, I think Hillary had more of them than he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark.
Why is it he's standing up to Republicans? Well, Bill Clinton stood up to Republicans better than Barack Obama.
Because the administration thinks, and this is the tragedy, the administration thinks that they're going to win by placating the middle.
There's no middle left.
I know that. You know, everybody knows that except them.
90% of Americans have made up their choice.
Well, politically or financially, there's no middle left.
No, there's no middle left.
That's it.
45% of Americans are going to vote for the Democrat no matter what. And 45% of Republicans vote for the other Republican no matter what. And the 10% in the middle don't care and generally don't vote.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Well,
and
that would work with the FAA thing because what the FAA, what the Republicans are pushing for, if people don't vote, that counts as a vote.
Here's the shocker. If you look at all the polls.
Not to segue too fast.
If you look at all the polls, what Obama proposed originally before he caved, and we'll talk about the cave, but raising revenue, making the rich pay their fair share. This is stuff supported not just by the majority of Americans, okay, but by the majority of Republicans.
Yes.
The majority
of
Republicans
of everybody.
Supported the Obama plan. A greater majority of Democrats supported his plan. All right? And so this is something that had the middle. And what I think President Obama needs to hear, and I know he's listening to our show right now in the White House.
He hasn't been listening enough, tell you that.
He must have turned y'all off
when I went away.
You
know, and Michelle hasn't been listening like she used to.
But if he's listening, what he needs to learn, frankly, is from, I'm sorry to say this, Ronald Reagan. The country was not as far right as Ronald Reagan when he was president. But he was a strong leader, was. And the country, he had an ideology, and he put forward his ideology, and people followed him. The irony is the American people support the progressive ideology. They support making the rich pay their fair share. They support making the banks pay up.
I agree.
And Obama is trying to placate the Wall Street Journal.
How about this? I'm going to make a very meager defense for President Obama in this instance. There's a meager defense there. Very meager. Okay. To some extent, I remember watching a movie a while back called The Dream Team. And in that, there was a standoff with this cop and this other guy, right? And they've got, you know, one of these Mexican standoff kind of things where both of them have a gun pointed at each other's head, right?
Why is that a Mexican standoff?
I don't know, but that's what I've heard. That's a little racist.
I don't know about that, Garland.
We need to find out where that originated. But the case,
there's a standoff.
They've got their guns pointed at each other's head. And the cop says, you know, drop your gun. I am a New York City police officer. And the other guy looks at him. He says, no, you drop it. I'm an escaped mental patient with a history of violence. The cop drops his gun.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. That's a very good point.
So here's what I'm saying. In a meager defense of President Obama, the reality was when you're up against someone who has their hand with the pin of a grenade and you know they'll let go and kill you both, you know, it gets hard to negotiate. The reality is the Tea Party really would have allowed economy to go
Michelle
now.
Bachman
put
said,
yourself,
I'd be good for
put
us.
Put yourself in his position, and now you have to make some ungodly deal that you would never,
I
ever
don't
want
think
to
that's
make.
It.
Or
I don't think that's it.
You know these people will absolutely do it.
No.
Your responsibility there as a president, Mark, you call the shot. You pull the trigger. Do you give in and say, okay, well, you know what? This is an escaped mental patient with a history of violence.
Let me answer you briefly. Terry's talking
about
a bit.
All wrong.
My brief answer is, that's why I began the show talking about the constitutional option. I think he did have options. He didn't want to use it. It hadn't been done before.
Bill Clinton said he would without hesitation, didn't he?
Bill Clinton said that he would veto any bill that attached anything to raising the debt limit, and he vetoed bill after bill, and people don't even remember it happened in 95 and 96. Now, you're right, though, Garland, that these people, the Tea Party, unlike the Republicans, 95 and 96, Newt Gingrich was reasonable compared to today's Republicans. Compared to today's Republicans.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich, they're the reasonable ones.
Right,
it tells you how far we've gone.
Yeah.
That's why I mentioned the constitutional option. All he had to do was say, gentlemen, either we work together, I'm taking my ball, and I'm going home.
Now, Bill Clinton said a couple weeks ago.
I think you're wrong, Garland. I really think you're wrong.
Yeah, Bill Clinton said he would have used the constitutional option.
I just want to say, a couple weeks ago, Bill Clinton said he would use the constitutional option and wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah, which tells you something right there. I mean, it's nice allegory that you had there, metaphor, whatever the heck that is, nice little story, you know, about the gun. I don't think
Michael Keaton, Dream Team, great movie.
I don't think that's what happened at all, because there's been such a pattern. I mean, this is just another in a series of folds.
The first time, I was surprised.
Yeah,
it's really
a fold.
You know, I've said it many times, and I'll say it again. The moment that man took office and did not repeal George W. Bush's restriction on presidential papers ever being released, I knew right then that the man's got something that's not quite right in his whole philosophy. I mean, that's unconscionable. You know, that's hideous.
Unconscionable is the word you're looking for.
Thank you, unconscionable. And then he continued. I mean, through the health care option and everything
else. Actually, it wasn't that easy for him to say.
He just backed down. It's almost like that seems to be his modus operandi.
I've actually heard some psychology about this.
Yeah. I mean, that if he backs down, good things will happen.
Some people are saying it because his father wasn't a president at home. I've actually heard people that maybe this is a guy who was always looking to compromise, always looking to... I remember arguing at the time of the election that whereas John McCain was a guy who would run off, you know, half-cocked and do whatever he wanted, get all red-faced, Obama was always someone who weighed all the options.
Yeah.
Here's what I remember Obama arguing against Hillary Clinton. He said, look, Hillary Clinton, Clintons, you've been so partisan. I'm going to bring this nation beyond partisanship. He said in 2004, very famously, that terrific speech. I mean, let's all feel good, where he talked about little leaguers in the blue states and gay families in the red states, and can't we all get along? Okay, that's Rodney King. But the same idea.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to move past partisanship, but no one wants to give up their principles in the meantime. And anyone who thinks they can move past partisanship, I'm afraid
I just came from Chicago. One of the things that surprised me is every progressive there that I talked to, progressives and Democrats, I didn't talk to any Republicans. I don't have any purpose in talking to them. But every single one said, look, Obama didn't do anything for us as a state representative. And they said he didn't do anything for us as a senator to the United States.
Why didn't they say that in 08?
Oh, I guess they fell for the hope in the campaign speech as well. They voted for him. They all voted for him, but they said we should have known because we knew he didn't do anything for us in either situation. Why did we assume he was going to stick to and do anything as a president?
And, you know, it's funny when you think back to the debates and everything that was going on. It's kind of funny when you think back because, you know, remember Hillary with the right-wing conspiracy?
Yeah.
Turns out she was right. But anyway.
Of course she was right.
The funny thing was that President Obama was saying, you know, or then candidate Obama was saying, you know, basically we can all get along, no red states, no blue states.
Right. And we all want to believe that. That's true.
And Hillary was saying, you're out of your mind.
That's right. You are naive.
These people are nuts, man.
Hillary,
they will not bargain with you. They will not strike a deal with you. They will try to chew you up and spit you out.
Well, but you know what? She'd been through it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Clintons in 93, they probably thought they could get along with the Republicans too. And then they lived through.
They learned real quick.
They learned the hard way. Yeah. And I remember a lot of young people who supported Obama. And listen, I endorsed Obama. I voted for Obama. I didn't vote for Hillary. So, you know, I'm as much at fault as anyone else. I'm not trying to blame anyone else. But I do remember a lot of young people saying, well, the Clintons was a time of really nasty partisanship. And therefore, maybe we bring this new guy in.
But it wasn't the Clintons that were nasty.
Exactly!
It was the other
And the partisanship, exactly. And the partisanship was nothing like it is today. I mean, nothing like it. It is so ugly. It is so aimless, other than just trying to defeat. Defeat is its only purpose.
But that's why we need leadership. And we need leadership from the White House. And frankly, Bill Clinton showed a lot more leadership than Barack Obama, in my humble opinion. Let's talk about the FAA.
Let me just mention one thing, because it just happened. I just read it today. And, you know, I think it's an interesting point of view. If there had been a primary candidate, a Democratic primary candidate that challenged Obama from the left.
John Edwards kind of did.
I mean, he talked about poverty. I mean, within, you know.
That would be a mistake.
I think it would, too. I wouldn't support that.
It may have pushed him to do something instead of.
It would cause us
down.
To get a Republican as president. It would make Mitt Romney.
We're going to get a Republican as a president anyway.
Well,
are you kidding?
Think so. I don't think so.
What, hope you're going to get Obama again? Do you want Obama again? No.
Oh,
yes,
I'm going to vote for Obama over any Republican.
You
are you
believe
kidding me?
I want Obama again.
Of course I'm voting for him.
So you can be continually disappointed by
a man who I think is at least trying.
He's not trying.
Okay, whether he's trying or not, I'd rather be disappointed by someone than horrified by someone.
I'd rather get a glass of flat soda than a brownie made of broken glass.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
I would rather have everything's relative.
That's right. That's true.
I would rather have a strong Democratic opposition, and he is undermining the Democratic opposition. That's going to be the only salvation.
I don't think he's undermining him, because I think Democrats are pretty angry right now.
Yeah, they are.
I know they are. But I mean,
a Satan sandwich?
Yeah, they're stuck in that strange position. Can you imagine trying to fight for these issues knowing or suspecting that, again, Obama is going to cave? You're putting yourself on the line as a Democratic senator or congressman.
But I think
you're putting yourself out there, and he backs
down? Well, let's
down?
Talk about the FAA, because that's cow. The next crisis coming up, the Federal Aviation Administration.
Can I say one thing before
real
we
quick.
Go? I think we got to stop using the term cave. And I'll tell you why. Because I
is
always...
That, is that offensive to
no,
people who live in caves?
That's right. Think about it. Yeah. Cavemen. Yeah. Even so easy to
cavemen. You're talking cavemen?
I'll tell you why. Because, you know, as I've said a million times on the show, you are what your record says you are, right? So if your record says you are a conservative Democrat, then in fact you're not caving at all. Well, you're going along with conservative Democrat
principles.
Well,
that's the question.
Regardless of whether you really are, your record says you are, so you're consistent with your record. Is that caving? Well, that's the question I want to ask our listeners. Isn't somebody doing what they've already done over and over? That's not caving.
Garland, that's the question I want to ask our listeners. But we're going to bring the phones open to them at the end of the half hour,
202-588-0893.
I want our listeners to tell me whether it's Obama... As I still believe, and maybe I'm wacko, okay?
But I still believe that Obama wants
to do the right thing and actually is caving. Or maybe it's the case that he is a moderate conservative and these are things he actually wants, and I'm just crazy for believing he was a progressive to begin with.
Or maybe he thinks that the right thing.
Really? You think he's a moderate conservative?
I think he's a moderate conservative in his actions, for sure, and in his political actions. You know, again, people talked about Chicago politics, you know, I mean, and they talked about it in terms of it being all corrupt, which is a minor problem for governments
unlike
in jail.
Unlike here in D.C.
Yeah.
There's a lot of corruption in politics, period.
Yeah, there is. But, you know, as if that was the thing. The real issue in Chicago politics is you don't rock the boat. You don't go into Chicago and say, you know, I'm just going
to
rock
this
boat.
You go along to get along.
Yeah, you go along to get along or you're out, you know, with the exception of Daley, who became king.
Well, I want some boat rocking, and let me give you what I want with the FAA. Okay, so here you have the Federal Aviation Administration. They're the people who, make sure that
planes don't crash,
air traffic controllers. They're kind of important.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make sure that the runways are cleared of one plane before the next plane lands.
That's a good idea.
Little things like that. So they're very, very important. They haven't been authorized. They're not being paid. They're falling apart, and Congress is going home.
4,000 of them are not.
Congress is going home for recess. Here's what I would do if I were President of the United States. I would say, ladies and gentlemen of the Congress, the FAA is not being paid. It is not safe to fly. So you can go on vacation, but if you do...
Take a train.
No. If you do, Saturday, and you start on Saturday because the big work days are Monday. On Saturday, I'm going to just say that no one flies.
Oh, that you could that economically is so destructive.
No, I'm going to do it because it's not safe. Or you can pass the FAA. All right? Saturday comes, there's one day of no flying, I guarantee you, everyone on Wall Street, everyone in New York, every businessman in the country says you get your behinds back in there. You authorize the FAA.
Yeah.
It goes into one work day.
What the Tea Party does?
It goes into one work day, and Congress goes crazy, and they authorize it like that.
And
the president needs to play hardball. I just think he has to threaten it. Just has to threaten
it. I agree.
It.
They never let it happen.
They'd never let it happen. And if it happened for one day, Congress would run back and pass that authorization.
They couldn't.
We need a president with cojones.
Can you imagine? I'm sorry. If he did that, you know, the Republicans would say, fine, do it. And he would be
no,
the most.
No, they wouldn't. Wall Street owns the Republicans. They wouldn't
that
dare.
That doesn't matter. He would be the most unpopular president in the history of America, which he may
so.
Become
I don't
anyway.
Think so either. It's
sure.
Like the, because like the Cuban Missile Crisis.
You can't do
Kennedy
it.
Kennedy stood firm, risked nuclear war, and he was loved for it.
The Cuban Missile Crisis.
I think you can.
Stopping the airlines and shutting down all transport in the country.
No,
for
not
one
all
day.
Transport. You shut down the airlines.
That is all transport, my friend.
We have cars and trains.
Yeah, right.
Cabs. No, but you know what? Here's the thing, Terry. But when
I agree with you about cars,
I do it.
But that's not the choice.
But if you make the argument, if he makes the argument,
it's for safety.
That it's for safety,
right?
And that my
hands are tied.
The head of the FAA has advised me that he cannot guarantee that we won't have planes smashing together over the airport. As a president, I cannot let this happen.
Oh, come Congress on, is guys. You're living something. In fantasy land.
No, I'm not.
Oh,
I would do it if I were president of the United States.
You would do it. Fine, but Babbitt would never even go along with that. I mean, the FAA is not shut down. The planes are being got. All the controllers
you allow emergency. You allow ambulance. You allow obviously saving live kind of stuff.
No,
but regular commercial airlines.
No,
I swear.
Yeah, I agree.
We've had weather patterns. You know, we have snow in Chicago that shuts down most of the network for a day. You shut it down for one day. Wall Street gets so upset. They say to all the Republicans that they own, and they do own them. They may not own the Tea Party, but they owe how many millions of
Bader
dollars?
Would be back.
They say, listen,
you know,
I gave $10 million to your campaign.
You guys really underestimate the situation that's going on here. I mean, there are people out to destroy Obama. There's no question of that.
I'm telling you how to fight them.
He's doing it himself to begin with.
Well, he's caving in.
Yeah, but nevertheless, that would be an action. They would just let him destroy himself.
No.
I don't think
that
so.
Would just add to
because
the lack of faith.
Because you forget the rich people that own the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And they need the airlines.
Hey, they have private jets. They have private.
Not all of them.
Sorry. Yeah. Shut down. They can't fly the private jets.
No. Shut down the private jets.
Yeah, man. Can't fly.
In fact, we'll shut those down first.
Yeah.
We'll shut those down for a day before we get to the commercial airline.
We
got to
give this up before the break.
You know,
let's do this.
Shut the private jets first.
Before the break, let's give the number out.
I got a pilot's license. You couldn't even stop
I'd shut
well,
you
first
down,
of all,
Terry.
You're flying,
like
Terry. I'm shutting everything down. No,
you know, Terry, you're the first one I'm shutting down.
You can fly VFR.
202.
No problem.
588.
0893. We'll wait for you, Terry.
It's safe.
202.
If you need a ride,
588-0893. Call in. Let us know. I got a lot of questions for you listeners. I got to know, first of all, what you think of my plan to save the FAA, to actually shut down the nation's airlines. Number two, I want to know from you folks if you think that, as I still do, and maybe I'm just naive, that Obama is a progressive that's constantly caving, or if you think he was a moderate conservative all along and we were tricked. I really want to know our listeners' view on that question.
One other thing. The second half.
We got to take a poll on this. We got to keep
the second half, we do have to touch on the tar baby comment.
Yeah,
yes,
we got to
touch
on that. Why don't you say it real quick before the break?
Congressman Doug Lamborn from Colorado Springs was on a radio show, a Tea Party Republican, and he said he compared the president to a tar baby. He said,
no.
It's like touching a tar baby.
Yeah.
That's what he said. It's like,
being stuck.
He said, I don't want to associate with him. It's like touching a tar baby. You get stuck and you can't get it off.
And Mitt Romney said the same basic thing back in 2008.
Well, no, he said something far different than that. He didn't say
he didn't
that.
Use the racially charged term.
He used the term tar baby,
but nowhere near in the same context. When someone says, it's like a tar baby, I don't want to associate with him, I don't want to touch this person because you get it on him. That sounds like, you know what, I don't want black people to get in pools with
me. What was so nice about what Mitt said?
I don't want them to drink from the same water fountain because you'll get it on you.
Here's the thing to remember.
It's disgusting.
Totally apart from the racial part of it, is that Obama, once he endorsed even the Gang of Six, which was far too conservative, once he endorsed that position, then the Republicans had to move further right. Basically, Obama is chasing a rainbow. Every time he moves closer to their position, they go further to the right. Yep. He could give them everything they want. I mean, remember, what is health care? This is a plan that, Mitt Romney did in
Nixon
Massachusetts. What is cap and trade? This is a plan that's promoted by the Heritage Foundation. Every single time, I mean, he supported the Bush tax cuts. Every time he embraces what the Republicans want, they move even farther to the right. He is chasing a rainbow. He will never catch it.
The
number is 202-588-0893. I want to hear from all of you folks.
Right after the break. We'll be back.
After this.
Hey, good people. It's me, Bobby Rocks, and I'm inviting you to my first Friday lunchtime mix. 12 to 3 p.m. Friday, August 5th at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Take the Metro to U Street Cardoza to avoid parking as Ben's is right across the street. Come eat, drink, and dance if you wanna as I do a live DJ set and broadcast live from Ben's Next Door Friday, August 5th from 12 to 3 p.m. You never know what celebrity may pop up or ticket giveaways I might have, so mark your calendars and come on down.
On Friday, August 5th, WPFW will present a special two-hour commemoration on the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan 66 years ago. We present this special program for all the people past and present who endured these horrific moments in human history. This program is for them. It is also for Ambrose I. Lane Sr., who on this annual show during his lifetime never let us forget Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Join our guest co-host Rick and Michelle Tingling Clemens and special guest John Steinbeck on Friday, August 5th, when they will remind us that the absence of war is not peace, that peace is for people, that peace is for the betterment and upliftment of all mankind. That's Friday, August 5th, 10 until 12 noon, right here on WPFW Washington.
Welcome back to the Ruckus Caucus. This is Mark Levine with
Terry D. Kester
and
Marilyn Nixon.
And I got to tell you, WPFW listeners, you do not disappoint. As soon as we went to break, we got calls. We filled up. If you tried to call and you didn't get in, it's because
but the weird thing you
our
got to
callers
admit,
called
you
know, so quickly they filled up all our lines right away.
But you were the first one to call. Line two, right there,
that's
says Mark.
That's not
Mark.
Me.
This is a little underhanded.
That is a different Mark. Oh, Mark,
nice try. Okay.
You made it first. Welcome to the Ruckus Caucus.
Is that me?
That is
you.
Hello, Mark.
I just wanted to point out that with the FAA thing, I think it's mainly a labor dispute and not having much to do. I heard Delta Airlines has a bunch of is fighting unions. And that's the reason.
Let me explain what happened,
yeah,
Mark.
It is a labor dispute.
There was a labor dispute. The courts came down and said that the union had a right to exist. Now, the Republicans have said, we won't authorize the funding of the FAA unless you squelch the unions. And they said, basically, you have to overturn this court decision, President Obama, or we won't allow the FAA to be funded. So it's a labor dispute that became a funding dispute because Republicans insist on tying it to the funding.
And the labor dispute.
So there is no funding of the FAA because of the Republicans refusing to do it because of the dispute.
And the specific labor dispute is, again, a union-busting tactic.
Oh, right, yeah. Of course.
You know, because it's simply that instead of the majority of voters, you know, determining whether they want to join union or go with union or not, the Republicans are saying that if the people who don't vote should be counted as opposing unions.
And allowing our checks and balance system for the judicial branch to act.
I think the people who don't vote should be counted as opposing Republicans.
Yes, I'm all for that.
I mean, that seems to me the only fair way to deal with that.
Are these guys on the planet?
Well, I want to hear what people think of my shutting down the airports idea. Terry thinks it's crazy. Garland, I think you kind of like
you.
It. Garland's with
me. Shut him down.
Gene, what do you think?
Well, I've been trying to decipher for the past 20 minutes of what you all were talking about and really with everybody trying to talk over each other.
Thank you.
So I've been trying to decipher some of that. But okay. I think President Obama is doing a terrific job.
Really?
Wow. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Why? And I think because he freely walked into the lion's den, he chose to do this.
And he chose to run for president.
One other thing, listen, you all talk over each other, but I don't want you to talk over me.
Go ahead.
Go.
When he came to the White House, and they have said, it has not been in the history of the U.S., I don't think, if I'm correct, that we've gotten to this brink where it was all publicized the way it was. It may have happened before about this the debt ceiling. I think it's been 75% of the fact that he's an African-American president and 25% of the being politics being played. So I think he freely walked into this knowing where he was going into a lion's den, but I think he, in his hoping that he would be able to communicate with the opposite side of the place, the Republicans.
Oh, I think he hoped
he
would
hoped
do it.
To do that?
I think he did hope to do that.
But other thing that you know, and I know, who runs this country? And that is the 1, 2, 3% of the rich people in this country. That's who runs the country. Okay?
But Gene,
it's not really the president. Had it been, we wouldn't be in two wars.
Yeah, but the question is he caving too much to that?
Yeah,
Gene,
I mean,
what do you think? Do you think he could have fought back more strongly than he did?
On any of the issues?
I think he did. I think he fought back as hard as he could, but these people didn't want to listen, not even the people on his own side, because I remember when he told the Democrats to go then before all of these Tea Party people won, but Harry Reid said, we're going to wait until after the election. He told them what to do. Has everybody forgotten that?
But, Gene,
but they don't listen.
I mean, you're right that the Republicans certainly don't listen, and they're not going to cooperate. You're absolutely right with that. But do you not think that he could not have done a much better job of taking it to the people, which is how the president gets things done? He can't legislate. He can't write the laws. But he can take the issues forcibly to the people.
You don't think he took it to the people, but the people did nothing, and we don't ever do anything. If we had listened, he went to the people and told people what to do, but do we ever come together and go to the Congress? We all should have been down there.
You're right about that, Gene.
I'm with you there, Gene.
Okay.
You're right.
We've
talked about this a lot. There's what's the four branches of government? The judicial, the legislative, the executive, and the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth is the people. And we have been absent in forcing either the president or Congress to do what we want. Even when we have the numbers or the polls in our favor, we don't show it. We don't come forth. We don't march. We don't do anything, and we end up getting exactly what we get.
Thank you for your call, Gene. I appreciate that.
Powerful points, Gene.
We do have some open lines now if you want to join in. 202-588-0893. Jordan, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Okay, what do I have to say? We need to reduce, number one, the U.S. government, Congress, people's salaries. Number two, we need to reduce the president's salary. Number three, we need to save Social Security. Number four, we need to save health care. Number five, we cannot avoid an education and or colleges, universities, or public schools. Number six, we need to basically find out how much debt we owe to China, which we might know probably at the moment.
Several trillion.
Get it down to 5 to 10 years.
Okay, Jordan, let me ask you this. If you cut off the president and congressional salary entirely and paid all of them zero, do you think that would have resolved it? Because I don't think so. I don't think it's about their salaries.
Zero, but at least to reduce it to a point where we are gaining some sort of ground.
Well, here's the other part of it, too. You know, a significant percentage of the members of Congress are millionaires.
Yeah, they don't need the money.
So a lot of them could work for nothing. A lot of them, this is tax money. Really, they don't need this money. They're looking for a way to find tax
deductions. They've got rich corporations who are funneling all their money to them anyway.
So, to reduce that, while I understand what you're saying, and I certainly in principle agree with you 100%, the reality of it is it wouldn't be enough to make a dent or affect the debt. And the other part is, for the most of them, it wouldn't hurt them anyway because they're already rich. They're not in it for the money.
There's a big issue, guys, here. You know, I mean, it's a lot of fun, but, you know, proposing these fantasy ideas, whether it's, you know, shutting down the airlines for a day, or
that's not a fantasy idea,
or not paying the congressman. These things can't happen, and somehow we got to get down to the gut issue here, and we have to identify not only what is wrong with this whole screwed up sinking country, but what in fact is going on in the White House. And we're not getting, you know, we've discussed it, but I mean, there is something rather tragic happening in this White House with this administration, with this president, and we've got to face that and deal with it.
I'm not going to put all the blame on him, though, because
I'm not putting the blame on him, but he is the only one in our screwed up system that could have changed the course here. It can't be done by Harry Reid. Come on. It can't be done by, you know, anybody in the
Congress.
We
need a strong president.
We need a leader. And that's the only way you can crack this incredible tragedy.
Let me put the number out again. 202-588-0893.
So here are my two questions out there for listeners. I want to know, number one, if you think President Obama is a progressive who is caving too much, or do you think that President Obama really is, these are the ideas he supports, he's a moderate conservative, or do you think I just got it all wrong? And the other issue I want to know, the thing that Terry Garland and I firmly disagree on, is this FAA crisis. The Republicans say we're not going to fund the people who watch our airlines, our skies, the Federal Aviation Administration, unless they change their views
happening.
On a labor dispute.
You know, if we're going to deal with issues, we have to deal honestly. The FAA controllers are not being furloughed. The only people that are being furloughed, which is important, are inspectors and office workers, but not the controllers. Got to make sure we at least keep this thing straightforward.
It's the inspectors. The point is that they've said we're not going to authorize funding for the FAA.
Yikes.
We're not going to do that unless you basically screw over the unions. And I say all President Obama has to do is threaten a week from now to shut down the skies for one day, and the Republicans will come back with their tail crawling between their legs.
Right.
The Tea Partiers would
do that?
No. But Boehner would, because listen, the Wall Street owns Boehner, he would follow what they say.
The
so
tea
I want to hear Matt.
Save us, Matt. Who's
right here, Matt?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
We're good.
Fine.
Listen, I wanted to say first of all, because you had mentioned such things, I was, and I do mean the only, I was the only person at Congress or the Senate over the weekend. I was there, and there was one female reporter from Dutch CNN. Everything was dead.
Interesting.
Yeah, disgusting is what it was.
Yeah.
But as far as...
I was out of town. I don't know about going, Terry, what their excuse is. But
As far as the president and the presidency is concerned, I'll tell you, I'm convinced at this point that the parties are basically the same, and I think everyone is, and I think I also
I don't think they're the same.
I also think the tea bags are a satellite party for the Republicans that do basically it's a lesser or a good cop, bad cop.
No, that's true.
It's going to be an extension of what they did with the Democrats, except now they have an even more extreme side to make the Republicans look like moderates. But I think personally, I think what we need to start pursuing is say to hell with the White House. The White House doesn't do anything anyway. We should just give the presidency to the Republicans and strive to control the Senate and Congress, because that's where they seem to do the most damage.
Thank you for calling, Matt, but I couldn't disagree with you more. The president still has tremendous power if he would use it.
There's one thing you got to never, ever forget when you think about, something comes to mind. I know.
The Supreme Court.
Bush v. Gore.
Oh, that too.
Who names the people on the Supreme Court?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? The difference between Bush v. Gore going the way it did and going into the other way.
We'd have 8 years of Al Gore and no war in Iraq.
So no matter what happens, you know, the people, and not to mention Roberts on the Supreme Court. Right. I mean, if Gore had come in, things would be
We'd have no Roberts.
No, but I mean, this is kind of pathetic. If we've reduced this democracy to the main reason to vote for a president is the hypothetical situation of who he might appoint
for the Supreme
Court.
I didn't say that's the main reason.
Court.
I'm just saying
Terry, are you saying you're not going to vote for Obama's reelection?
I'm going to weigh the entire political situation. Now, if it's any other candidate, you know, the only candidate that I have any respect for in the Republicans is Huntsman, and I've met him and talked to him, so I have some respect for Huntsman.
Chance.
None.
I probably not.
He's far too reasonable.
Probably not. So probably not. But you know, like I said, and I sort of agree with our previous caller. You know, perhaps the best way to fight this is the same way the Republicans are fighting it: is to get a strong Democratic Congress to contain the situation until we get a true leader, as maybe Hillary, in 2016. Because if we get Obama again, it's going to be the same game, guys.
Wait, but
the
thing about it is the idea of putting in a Republican, letting a Republican president win
crazy.
As opposed to Obama. Once again, I said it's the difference between a flat soda and a brownie made of broken glass.
Not if
one of them doesn't taste so good.
One of them kills you.
The other one rips your guts on the way through.
You're not paying attention. What I'm saying is you got to get a strong Democratic Congress, which is a different focus, which
is exactly what
we
need more progressives in Congress, no question about it. Let's go to Justin. Justin, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
If you dare.
How you doing, fellas?
Hey, Justin.
Just driving through on my way to Philadelphia. Couldn't help but chime in.
Yeah, please do.
Honestly, I don't think Obama is any worse or any better than the cast of liars we have put into office over the years. These guys are beholden to corporations. The reason why we have a revenue problem is because we don't enforce the tax code we have. GE didn't pay any taxes last year. I owed the government a couple grand. GE didn't pay any taxes. In fact, they got $58 billion in tax credits and then proceeded to lay off 20,000 people.
Right.
The problem is these corporations aren't being stood up to by either party because the corporations...
fund the parties.
In office. They're
that's
installed
right.
in there, and then they're the puppets of the corporations. As long as the corporations continue to run this country, it's always going to get worse for the working man, and that's how it will always be.
Betsy, Justin, the three of us agree with you. What's your answer? What's your solution?
As much as it pains me to say it, I think public funding of campaigns and get, you know, there's. I think the Supreme Court just legalized... not legalized, but it's a lot easier for corporations to directly
they did.
They legalized
contribute.
It.
Yeah. No, they did. They legalized it. Right. Yeah. It is a huge problem.
That's legalized bribery.
Let me give you the
three of us talk, just so you know, Justin, I don't know if you've heard the Raucous Caucus before, but that's something that the three of us strongly agree with, both public financing and lowering corporate influence, and we've all three very strongly supported that.
We just don't believe it's going to happen
let me pick up on what Justin said. The answer to the problem is pretty simple, and it may not seem simple. Nothing is going to change as far as Obama's concerned or this Congress is concerned or either the whole corrupt system until the politicians in office are afraid. And I mean that with all the implications. Until they are afraid.
I do not mind challenging members of Congress from the left.
I do not want to see violence or riots. I do want to see demonstrations.
No.
Right.
But until they are afraid, I don't mean just from challenging, but I mean literally afraid that they are going to lose what they have in every aspect.
That's why I suggested shutting down the skies for a day, because then they would be afraid.
Nah.
All right, let's go to Phil.
Streets.
Phil. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Okay, first I'm going to talk about the FAA, then I'm going to talk about our wonderful conservative president, okay?
All right, go ahead.
Go, Phil.
Okay, so the backstory on the FAA is they have funding for their operations. They're not going to shut it down. But what we're hearing is the threat to do it, and that's what's scaring us. They're trying to scare us into it, okay? We want the union. We do want the unions. Even the Republicans want the unions.
No, they don't.
You know
Republicans don't want the unions.
Yes, they do.
Why would Republicans want unions?
Why?
Okay, well, no. Let me tell you the real story why they want. They're holding it up. Because these small airports that are getting up to $3,500 per ticket to keep these airlines open. That's the only thing that's bringing in revenue. And the fourth branch.
I don't think it's about those airports. I think that's a minor issue.
Okay, the fourth branch of the government and the airlines and the airports are really, really putting pressure on Congress and the Senate to stay open. So you're gonna see a nasty fight on this. They're gonna keep it open. They've got funding for the operations.
Okay. What do you think of my idea to shut the skies down for a day, or at least threaten to make the Republicans play ball?
It'll never happen.
You don't think it'll happen. You think it's a good idea. Would you do it if you were president?
No, I would not. You're going to disrupt it. It's too disruptive. I mean, look, you're going to shut it down. You're going to have. Are you kidding me? The Democrats don't even want to do that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They got to play some hardball.
Well, you know what? And see, if the point Mark is making here is this. Nobody wants to do it. The Democrats don't want to do it. The Republicans don't want to do it. Therefore, if you threaten to do it,
Right.
They're not going to let it happen.
Exactly.
It's not like that they would say, oh, well, you know what?
Let's
we'll
play chicken back.
No, they wouldn't let it happen.
Play chicken back.
So you're right, but that's your point is correct, but that could be used as an argument.
They care about it more than we
fantasy,
do.
Fantasy, doing it. Fantasy,
all right, Phil, what's
fantasy.
Your point about Obama, the moderate conservative?
I think we lost Phil.
Did we lose Phil?
Yes.
Okay, oh, I'm sorry. He had a second point. I think we called Obama
a
moderate conservative.
If you call back, we'll try to get you in, Phil.
All right, Tammy, let's hear from Tammy. What are your thoughts?
Good evening. My comment is quite simple. I think the American public has become complacent with cable television, and there's where they protest. You have a million callers for a reality television show, but no one will show up to challenge their congressperson to hold the constituents' beliefs and needs. So
Tammy,
I think we just become quite complacent and are returning to a McCarthy era via the internet.
You know,
Tammy,
we need to go to town hall meetings. You know, the Republicans did it a year ago. Why aren't we progressive flooding town hall meetings? We're doing a few of them. But Tammy's absolutely right. We've heard this consistent thing
like
from
you,
callers.
Terry,
was that you that called in?
No, that was Terry.
That's a different
Terry. A very
smart lady.
A very smart lady.
Michael, what are your thoughts?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
We're okay.
I've heard the term playing hardball. I wish I had more. I'd like to sit with you guys for hours over dinner at some point.
Well, okay.
Anyway, in a short time.
Come next week to Ben's next door, and you can do that.
Okay, well, I'll try it sometime. But
right.
I play hardball with friends of mine in the American public. Spineless.
Who, the public or the Congress or the president?
Excuse me just for a second. You got time to talk.
No, I just want to know who you're calling spineless.
Really quickly, if you listen, you'll know. My point is very simple. This country has never been formed by the people. When it was first taken by the original terrorists that some of you talk about, like wonderful people, like Mr. Jefferson, I'm saying this. Even those people we used to call white folks didn't want slavery, but they went along with it because the rich folks thought it was okay. There's so many examples of this not being this wonderful, beautiful country we talk about. So attainable, we've never, ever had it. The way I play hardball is just like this, just speaking my mind. This country is a cesspool and always has been. The only thing we need to do is find a wonderful way to inspire regular folks like you and me and everybody listening to get off our sorry, apathetic butts.
Yes.
And do whatever it takes. If I had the answer, there'd be a cross for me and I wouldn't have it. We're not playing hardball with each other. This is a bunch of talk until American people do more than just vote. We are the grease for the machine.
Yes.
We are the grease for the machine.
Thank
but
you,
you know
Michael.
What's interesting?
That's
we're
it.
Hearing. What's interesting is this. Have you noticed this, guys? Over the last several months, we've heard more so than we've heard in the last few years of doing this show, people starting to say, we got to get off our butts.
That's right.
We got to get in the streets. We got, well, Terry says it, but, you know, we won't count him.
Terry's been saying that since the 60s.
Terry, and wait a minute. And Terry and John Conyers both said it.
That's right. I'm darn right. Yeah. And let me, you know, I mean, if you want to do this, you believe this, look up the Black Institute, which is an offshoot of, I can't even remember, I think it's one of the leaders from Acorn originally, but the Black Institute to help us get on the streets. Check out moveon.org to help get us on the streets. And check out the American Dream as well to get us back.
There's
in the
some
streets.
Empty lines now if you want to join us.
These organizations are working towards this, and we've got to work with them and support them to get demonstrations in this city until the Congress is afraid.
We got a couple minutes, but I do want to touch on. We didn't say anything. I didn't hear what you guys thought about it.
The Tar Baby.
Landborn saying, that basically he didn't want to associate with the president. It was like touching a tar baby.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to get it. You get stuck. You don't want to get it on you. And my point that says this sounds like segregation. You don't want black people in the pool with you. You don't want them in your, say, restroom. You don't want them drinking from the fountain with you because whatever it is, you'll get it on you.
I don't know Congressman Landborn. I don't know his history.
You think he's a Tea Party member?
I do know that behind a lot of the Tea Party rhetoric is a lot of racism. Some of it conscious, some of it unconscious, I think. I think that there's a feeling. You know, just look. If you just look at the history of the Republican Party, it's fascinating.
If you look at the history of America.
Well, what's interesting is you find that if you look at the red states, the southern states, the plain states, the states we think of today as the red states.
Or the gray states, as I call them. The Confederacy.
The Confederacy and the plain states. Yeah. These were states, by the way, that if you go back 100 years, if you go back even Franklin Roosevelt's time, go back 80 years, they supported things like Social Security. They were the progressives. In fact, there was a progressive party 100 years ago, and what did it want? It won the plain states. They supported progressive ideas when, guess what, blacks weren't included. Mm-hmm. As soon
as Lyndon Johnson,
I'm talking about Nebraska and Kansas. I'm talking about old Confederacy. Yeah.
You can't put the plain states with the South.
Those are the red states.
They kind of are now.
Those are the red states. What do you think the red states are?
That's demographic nonsense.
No. Who do you think the red states are?
He's saying if they vote with them. Politically, they are.
What I'm telling you are.
Yeah, the South used to be Democrats, if you recall.
Right.
But it didn't matter.
They were Democrats when Democrats
opposed all social change.
No.
Social change came from the Rust Belt.
You're missing what I'm saying. You're right, they used to be Democrats. You're right, they used to be progressives. They used to support social programs when they thought white people got them.
Right.
As soon as Lyndon Johnson included black people in the equation,
the
suddenly
South
you found
supported social programs.
Yes, they did. You want to know who supported Social Security? You want to know who supported?
Yes,
they supported Franklin Roosevelt.
No. The workers. It was an industrial.
What I'm telling
it
you,
it was an industrial country at that time, and it was
the
workers
Democratic
in the
Party.
North and the East. There was no industry in the South. Those were the ones who supported those issues. And that's where the issues got their muscle.
I'm telling you, politically history, if you look at early social programs.
I'm telling you political history.
I think what you're saying here is I would say the workers' parties started, they were the foundation of those issues.
Yeah.
But back then, the Southerners did support those issues.
Look at William Jennings Bryan. Look at the history.
They supported the issues when the melting pot, black people weren't in the melting pot.
That's right.
So they saw everybody in the melting pot can get something out of this, but they're not in the pot.
I'm taking that back to your tar baby comment.
Okay,
my point is this: look it up, Terry.
You look it up.
100 years ago,
okay, back to the
come on.
A minute. But I want to hear
look at the Progressive Party.
We're back to the tar baby. Back to the tar baby comment.
Tar baby. Back to the tar baby.
My point is that
before it's going to get violent in here soon.
My point is that there are a lot of poor white people that used to think that social programs were good until poor black people were included in them. And I think that the tar baby comment to me brings it all coming home, that there are people out there whose racism actually trumps their own economic realities.
Boy, that is a stretch. That is a stretch. There's no question that there's racism in this country. There's no question that the racial issue has not been solved. And there's no question that there's a large portion of the population would love to see a black president fail. And they are led by idiots like Rush Limbaugh. But the history that you're bringing in is a stretch that does not bear out. I'm sorry. The racism today is the issue in either case. We don't have to debate about the history. The racism today is the issue, and the deliberate attempt of a lot of powerful people to destroy Barack Obama is very much an issue that we should explore.
The interesting thing is that it's not just that he says it. You know, when I listen to what people say, because there had become a time that towards the end of the Clinton administration, we actually started to see where a lot of the comments and things that were said, our society was starting to say, this is unacceptable, and people kind of stopped saying them. And then the Bush administration came in, the right wing moved in, and some of these scumbags started sliding out from under their rocks again. Now they've taken it to the next level, and what's interesting is that these people in the Tea Party started by sending, well, actually the Republican Party started by sending, you know, kind of clandestine, underhanded messages to the racists,
right,
that said we're with you, and the Tea Party members are in, and it's just a flat out, hey, we need to go back to segregation.
People are always going to say, well, we're not racist, we're just against Obama's policies. It could be that some of them are just doing what they did to Bill Clinton. Every single right-wing dirty trick they know because they don't want a Democratic president.
Again, right.
And some are doing it because they're racist. Whatever reason they're doing it, the point is we need a strong leader to come back and say, no, I'm the president of the United States, because I actually think the American people will be with Obama. if he would stand up to the right.
Well, the numbers, so too. Of course, the polls all indicated. Of course they do.
You know what? The numbers bear out. The things that we sit here and we say we're in favor of. You know, I was talking to somebody the other week and they said, these are progressive policies. I said, the reality is they're not progressive policies. I would love to say that my position are progressive positions, but it's not. If you look at the numbers, 70% of the American people agreed with me. I am a progressive, don't get me wrong, but the policies that we're calling progressive policies are basic humanistic, they're basic fair policies of fairness, and anyone with half a brain, well, with a whole brain.
Let me just conclude by saying this. Obama is constantly looking for a middle between Democrats and Republicans. Instead, he should be looking at the middle of America, the middle of those polls, and he'll find out there are a lot of progressive ideals that he supports and he can support. We will be next week at Ben's Next Door at 1211 U Street. Come join us. One of you, I forgot who it was.
Michael.
I think
Michael wants to talk
wants to have
wants
dinner
rat,
with us.
Yeah.
All of you can see us in person and argue with us in person next Tuesday. If you're not available to come down live, you're always available to listen every Tuesday.
But don't come down dead. 89.3
FM, WPFW. Terry, you've got a show tomorrow
I got a show tomorrow morning, Wednesday at 10
o'clock. Awesome show. I'm going to listen.
Yeah, what's at stake? And there are other issues in this country that have to be dealt with, believe it or not. And one of them is the increasing secrecy. And to lead us into this discovery of secrecy in America and the classification of everything secret practically and secret black ops, et cetera, I'm going to be interviewing Annie Jacobson, who wrote Area 51, the uncensored history of the United States' most powerful military base.
You got to listen to this show.
You want to check that out.
This is really something you want to listen to. This is going to be amazing.
How can people find you if they I mean, look under a rock? Where do you hide?
In the commissioner's office being charged with a
felony. I'm so glad this guy is
back. You go to his arraignment.
Garland and I have some nice peaceful
shows. Hey, we only got a few seconds. If they want to find you, Terry.
WPFW.org. You can hear all of our shows, by the way, in the past, and you can find us all on Facebook.
And Garland.
Facebook me, Garland Nixon.
You can Facebook me as well, Mark Levine. I also have a new Twitter, Mark Levine TV. You can follow me on that.
Whoa.
And at marklevine.tv, I have all the Raucous Caucus shows.
Hey, we're going to start Twitter and it bends, too. Maybe not this time, but the next time we're going to be Twitter.
We'll be tweeting soon. So join us next week. This was the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you.